All right, let's head over to the Zoom line. Kelly Marshall on the line with us, Chief Marketing Officer within the oil and gas industry. She's also an energy ambassador as she was at the state capitol in Colorado for, Kelly, was it Energy Day? Was that what it was officially called? Was there a theme day behind it? I think Energy Day at the Capitol is what I think I saw.
I think that that's what they were calling it, yes.
And so Energy Day at the Capitol this year, I was actually trying to pay attention to it. I wasn't able to get out there, but I was anticipating there would be a pretty big showing this year from the oil and gas industry due to the three legislative bills that are looking at flat out banning oil and gas.
Yes.
You were there at the Capitol. Give us the rundown. What was the attendance like? What was the vibe like? Give us a little bit of a walkthrough.
It was, fortunately, everyone that showed up was composed. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, there was no boisterous anything. It was an enthusiastic group of people, but they were composed, I was proud to be part of it because of that. And Colorado Oil and Gas Association is the one who put the day together. And Dan Haley spoke very eloquently about the issues and was incredibly thankful for the 200 plus people that showed up to support not pushing through this legislation. And, you know, hopefully it makes a difference.
What is some of the legislation that, I guess, in a nutshell, I mentioned, you know, this is the ban oil and gas. I want to say that the target date is by 2030. What are some of the people saying in terms of, you know, the sound bites and some of the, you know, the things that are being told amongst each other that is being used to motivate people one way or another, either to get them to support this or get them to, you know, go and campaign against it?
Well, it seems that the pro Senate Bill 159 people, they're clearly people on the left, and it's kind of a broad stroke of reduce carbon emissions, get to net zero, have, you know, let's forego energy in order to have, in air quotes, a greener economy and a greener way of life. And on the other side, you've got oil and gas producers and an entire industry of employees who are saying, one, I don't want to be without power. Two, I don't want to pay two, three times as much for my energy or the gas that's in my car because we're going to ban it in Colorado and have to get it either from overseas or from other states who are already at max capacity. And if you really dig into it, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It doesn't make any sense, really. And it seems like the political agenda is leading the day.
You mentioned there was 200, 250 people mm-hmm. at the Capitol. Was that right?
Yes, sir.
What is that like there? Here's why I ask is I've been covering political affairs and government affairs for, I don't know, 20, 25 years at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen an evolution. I've seen a change of a lot of different areas, but I've seen a change happen in protesting when it comes to social media, mm-hmm. where I've seen in some instances, it's become a photo op where it's almost like going to a gala. People are going for the party pics and want to be seen. And as soon as they get their party pick, they take off and they go. They're not even there 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get the other ones who, you know, they look at it like they've got CNN on their side and the world's viewing everything. So they're either instigated or trying to get something on video or trying to, you know, capitalize in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
What was the attendance like there? You know, 250 some people, did they storm Jared Governor Polis's office? Did everybody just hang out and do a couple photos on the Capitol step? Give us kind of a walkthrough on you know, modern day protests, what that looks like.
Well, they started across the street and we were politely asked to leave that venue because the group was a little too boisterous for that closed area. So we went across the street to the Capitol steps, and then everyone just stood around talking for a while. They got the mic up and working, and everyone stood and listened to the facts about the bill, the bills that are under review, and about the vote. And Dan was incredibly thankful for everyone that came out and showed up. And when we went into the building, there weren't many legislators there. And the one in the Senate room, there was activity, and we sat quietly in the gallery and no one said a peep. Everyone took off their pro oil and gas stickers while they were in the building. It was very composed.
One of the things that I'd like to ask you about is kind of the message and the reach of the message. One of the reasons that we wanted to have you on was not only for, you know, the Crude Life audience, but, you know, we're on radio stations as well, so we can reach out beyond the industry, beyond, you know, the friends and family, if you will, into people that, you know, are veterinarians or work at Walmart or are school teachers. Because I've always looked at it that, you know, if 97%, 96%, 95% of everything that we use, from our toothbrush to our bed sheets to our hot water, need oil and gas or coal. Okay, so whether it's the production of it or what it's manufactured or the transportation, I've always thought that the industry should do a better job of reaching out to people outside the industry, because that's their end customer. That's their end user customer. And so that was kind of my motivation behind asking, was this more of a industry rally or was this a protest? Like, we're going to go point our fingers and go storm Governor Polis's office because, dang it, we want our jobs back and that sort of thing. But it sounded like more like an industry rally because if it wasn't people there, and I have no idea if session was going on and that sort of thing. Anyway, I'm not trying to come across negative. I'm trying to come across more of an observational type question. And my question is, do you have any idea what I just said?
You know, I think what you're fishing for here is, was there an energetic anti this legislation mood? And I wouldn't say that that came across with exuberance. I feel like this group of people is so beaten down by the public opinion of fossil fuels and oil and gas and the steady barrage of green energy, green, 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 that they don't really feel like they are allowed to speak up. If they just stay quiet, you know, maybe they won't get harpooned. Maybe they won't be the whale that surfaces and gets seen. So as an industry as a whole, I feel like they're just so worn out. And, you know, they were there as bodies and they were, you know, excited to support and be there together, but it's not the kind of rally where people are yelling and jumping and excited to be there. This is a very depressing thing that this entire group is facing.
What can Colorado leaders do? I remember speaking back in 2016 and warning them about this very issue, actually, and trying to in my opinion, reach the youth, you know, the YouTube and Instagram. And I don't even think TikTok was around back then, actually, mm-hmm. when I was speaking on this. I was even talking about the ESG movement coming mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. Colorado has had its challenges for the oil and gas industry. Where do you think leadership should focus, I guess, is maybe the question, because whatever's going on right now, it doesn't seem to be connecting.
I think the most important thing that the industry as a whole can do is start talking, which I do think they've done. CRED has done a great job with ramping up their media buy.
Coloradans for Responsible Energy Development.
So CRED is an organization that lobbies and creates advertising and public relation campaigns to communicate with the public on behalf of the industry. And they are the ones running the ads that are on the air pretty regularly here in Colorado right now, basically just saying oil and gas in Colorado is the cleanest anywhere in the country. We're very proud of our industry. We're very proud of the way we safely and as cleanly as possible bring energy to each and every one of you in your homes. That is what they've needed to be saying, instead of either being defensive about, you know, oil and gas isn't bad, stop telling us we're bad, you need it for your toothbrush, we need it for jobs. They're giving people all the wrong reasons to be behind it, instead of just standing up proudly and saying, we're doing this right. We're an example on the world stage of how to do this. Instead of shutting down energy in this state, we should be traveling all over the world and showing other countries how to do this right, how to do it responsibly, how to do it with almost zero emissions, how to, you know, responsibly tackle all of our legacy assets and start dealing with those. As an industry, they've just got to start communicating, and they need the right message. And they've been off message ever since I got in the industry 4 years ago.
One of the questions I have is, I'm looking at this, you know, Coloradans for Responsible Energy, and you mentioned a lot of those talking points that I've heard for a decade now, and they're all great, but I go back to, it just doesn't seem to be connecting. And so when I take a look at, you know, there's like five or six nonprofits in almost every state that it just seems like they're all saying the same message.
No, I mean, you know, the very well-produced campaign of everything in your living room disappearing that's made of oil and gas. So your television disappears, your remote, you end up sitting on the floor. I honestly, that comes across to people that are anti-fossil fuels as, I don't buy it and I don't care. It comes across as defensive. Whereas when you just stand up and say, I'm proud of what I'm doing, because I'm keeping your lights on, and I'm going to do that responsibly, and I'm going to do it affordably, and I'm going to keep doing it until you make me stop. And just the other thing that they've done is they've actually put a media buy behind this thing. They were spending nothing. They were never on air. They didn't have a social media presence. They're actually spending money for the first time that I've seen since I've been in the industry. And all you have to do is say it. Over.
And this is the CRED you're talking about?
Yeah, the ads that I think are on message right now are from CRED.
So I'm glad you pointed that out, because what you did is a very articulate job of pointing out positioning. And that's been one of my issues, and one of the arguments, and one of the debates, and one of the many of the conversations I've had with leaders in the industry, which is positioning. That the message is fantastic. It's how it's positioned.
Exactly.
Is where the issue is because the way, I can't remember how you described it, but what you landed on is, they don't believe you. It's like too good to be true, or you're yelling at them, or you're delegating authority. Whatever the position is, it's being rejected. But if it's positioned this way, well, now you're starting to connect.
So that's back to my point of the middle. So if when communicating, and you know your target, you understand them, you've taken the time to understand them instead of standing in your defensive posture and thinking you're right and they're wrong. Instead, if you actually open your mind to what is the issue? Is it that they're hearing the word biofuel and they think that's better than natural gas? It sure sounds better. So does the word green. So does the word clean. It sounds better. And then you explain that it's burning trees. And the first thing everyone says is, well, what do you mean? But they're calling it biofuel instead of burning wood, because No one wants to burn trees. Trees absorb carbon dioxide, which is one of our big problems. So it's all packaging. And it's maddening that with the right words, people will drink the Kool-Aid. You've just got to say the right thing, and you've got to say it enough. In politics, they say, if you say it three times, it's true. Well, if you're running ads and you run an ad, you know, a handful of times per cycle, you're not making a dent. You've literally got to knock on my door every morning for 2 months straight for me to hear you in the background while I'm making my coffee. And eventually I'm just going to think, you know what? Oil and gas is not bad. I don't want my gas price to go up. I want a clean environment and I want my lights on.
You know anybody who's ever owned an EV vehicle?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I've known three.
They won't buy another one.
Well, and that's where I'm going with it is that I've known three very good friends that have bought EV vehicles, and all three have returned their EV vehicles and no longer own them. Now, on the flip side of that, I've probably a half a dozen or so people that own hybrids. And they love hybrids. I haven't heard a bad thing about a hybrid from a hybrid owner.
Me neither.
I haven't heard a good thing about an EV from an EV owner. And that tells me that middle ground, though, is where it's at.
Right. Because, again, it's a compromise.
Exactly. But it also works.
Right. So have you heard of the movie Planet of the Humans?
I have heard of that. Why have I heard that? Is that a documentary?
It is a documentary. It is an essential documentary for everyone on the left and the right of this issue. It was released in 2020. Michael Moore, who is a pretty staunch left-wing person, produced this film.
That's why I've heard of it. Yeah, okay. That's why I've heard of it. Yeah.
And a lot of people, because his name was associated with it, a lot of people on the right never bothered to watch it. I also sent it to a good friend of mine who is a environmental attorney. And I thought, you know what, she's going to, even though she's very far left, she's going to appreciate this message and how well it's crafted. And the fact that they cover everything from fossil fuels, why they're bad. Then they go into all of the alternatives and how they're worse and how we are actually destroying the planet from mining quartz and coal for the solar panels. And the fact that that process is so hard on the planet and on other cultures that are tasked with digging up everything. And then he goes into wind. And the reason I bring this up is you just said something that made me think of in this film, there's a concert and they're on the stage and they're saying, you know, this entire concert is being run by solar. This entire concert is green. The documentarian walks behind the stage and he said, he sees this little tiny solar panel setup. And he said, is this array actually running this show? And they're like, oh no. That diesel generator over there is running the concert. This is just running the lights around the stadium, I think is what he said. And then when the sun went behind the clouds, it started to rain, then the solar wasn't being used for anything. But it was an Earth Day concert. And it was completely run off of solar panels. And because they said it three times, no one questioned it.
That's a big part of what's happening. And what's frustrating to me is when you take a look at the way, like, if you want to go back to the founding fathers, the way the system was set up was really there's supposed to be three parties. There's supposed to be a right, a left, and a center.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
And those three parties are supposed to, you know, have basically equal power. And that way you've got this three-party system that's supposed to work, just like you have the three, you know, branches of government, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right now, you know, if anybody's going to argue that there's a third party, it's the shadow government behind the scenes controlling, you know, the politicians. Because the independents haven't had a showing for, I don't know, probably since the Bull Moose Party. I mean, you know,
For
really.
at least 20 years.
Well, I mean, I guess if you want to call Ross Perot, that'd probably be the last successful
Yeah.
one,
And
you
that
know,
was
really.
exciting. Do you, yeah, I remember.
Yeah, I mean, in Minnesota, we had Jesse the Body Ventura win as an
Yes.
independent as governor. So, I mean, we had, you know, a little bit of a fun time up there. But, you know, outside of that, you know, there's supposed to be this three. The way I look at it right now is we're not even playing on the same team. So when the three-party system is set up to be the way it is, you're supposed to have an offense, a defense, and a coach all working together with your own lanes and your own philosophies, but you're a cohesive unit on the same side. Right now, we got two parties that are playing against each other, and they're doing it out of spite, and they're doing it out of competition, and I don't even understand it. Like, I can't even fathom how polarizing energy has gotten. When I got into this industry 12 years ago from talk radio and journalism and real estate and all these other things, energy wasn't political. It
No.
wasn't at all. No.
Well,
And so
if you
anyways, go ahead.
follow the money, if you follow the money, you'll always find the truth. And they in this film, they follow the money. And the money trail that they reveal, and it's near the end of the film, it just leaves you, I'm not going to build it up as anything but depressing, because it is a very depressing, honest account of the world and the situation we've gotten ourselves into. It's yeah it, I think that everyone on both sides should see it, and it's produced by Jeff Gibbs. He is the lead in it, and he wrote it, produced it, he stars in it. And he was a tree hugging, put sand in the backhoe to stop it from taking out the forest environmentalist. And he feels honestly, as the more he learned, he realized there is no environmental movement. It's all about money. And if you follow the money and the greed, the things we are doing that we're calling green or clean are 9 out of 10 times worse for the environment than natural gas. Then, we have more than, let's see, we have 2.5 million miles of pipeline in this country. And if the environmental movement had its way, we would abandon that. But and then they'll say, well, we're going to go all electric. What does that even mean? Because when you plug into electricity, where do you think that power is coming from? Would you rather have them burn trees and or biofuel, or would you rather have responsibly sourced, incredibly low emission natural gas powering everything? It makes no sense. I mean, if everything is evil, which everything is, it's all bad. But if you come at it from that perspective, and you tell people, if I'm an oil and gas company and we say, I know oil and gas is bad, I cannot wait till there's a replacement. We are throwing every dime at research and development we have to spare to create that next source of energy. But in the meantime, this is the least evil evil. And we're making it cleaner every day, more responsible every day, and the technology we have watching us, monitoring us, it's state of the art, to the point that there's no excuse for leaks. There's no excuse for any emissions over an incredibly low percentage.
One of the things I tell school kids when I go speak and have spoken in the past is there's always a question about, you know, something to do with the smoke, or one of the kids asked me about fracking water and the deer drinking it and dying. That's a pretty advanced question for a second
Yeah, it
grader.
is. That's heavy.
For a second grader, I'm like going, okay, who put him up to this? But honestly, that's the stuff you get, right? Is you know, I mean, and for me, I'm cool with it because I handle it pretty much almost the same way, where I'll bring the kids back to when we had whales and seals, and you know, and how we, you know, fire, and we needed to figure out ways burning trees, and we started burning too many trees, and then they started going after the whales and using the whale oil. And I said, you know, honestly, I go, if it wasn't for coal, we probably wouldn't have any whales left. And I go, a lot of people didn't even really want coal in the beginning, but it was better than whales.
Right.
And so we went to that and then explained, you know, I go, and then, you know, with oil, I go, it was coming out of the ground. Should we just leave it there? But should we just let it come out and leave it there or what? And then I go, was it 70% of the oil found in the ocean is still leaching out of the ground? That's how they find it. It's because it's leaching out of the ground. Mm-hmm. Same thing with natural gas. I mean, there's pockets that just shoot it up. But I explained to them in the same way that we went off whales and all these other things. And I bring up coal and say, you know, like coal, I bet it's going to solve our water problem. So we need to shift our mindset instead of demonizing it, because we can figure out why it's here, because all energy has a purpose and we are all energy. Mm-hmm. And I really look at it that way. And that to me is the compromise in the whole thing. And so that's always been my message to industry, is listen to what the other side is saying and then ask them if they'll listen to you and try to explain to them where your compromise is.
Well, and honestly, it, 9 times out of 10, it begins with agreeing. We all agree. Yeah, it's none of this is good. Is global warming bad? Sure. Is our fossil fuel emissions bad? Yes. Is 100 acres of wind turbines each, that the construction, the fossil fuels that went into making each one and continue to run them, and the cement foundations for this massive wind farm. I was driving to Palm Springs and it was unbelievable, the size of this. I looked it up and there are over 1,000 windmills there. And you look at it and it looks like a decrepit scene from the movie WALL-E. 1 in 20 is turning. They're rusting, they're brown, they're leaking oil, the turbines have broken. It literally looks like an abandoned experiment. And that's what we do. We run toward the next thing. We have the government fund it. A bunch of companies pop up and capitalize on this boom of wealth. And then it's abandoned as a failed experiment. And that is what a lot of these other options feel like to me. And I talked to a friend of mine in construction this morning. He builds solar arrays. And he said, Kelly, there is nothing green about solar, nothing. And he went on to explain the manufacturing process. It's all made in China, the parts that aren't. And then the way that they have to make it is not a clean process. Then they have to ship it from the other side of the world. That is all fossil fuels. Then they need to ship it to the locations. Then the concrete and the infrastructure and the disturbance of the land and the taking of these natural environments to make them completely covered by a man-made mirror system. It's insane. And when you actually look at what percentage of the grid that can support, I'd love to understand, I really would, how this ever got sold. How did people buy this? I get that people want to run toward an option that feels like it'll save them, but if they actually saw the statistics on what it costs the environment to make the batteries for your Tesla and then to find a way to dispose of them, if they saw the mining and the chemical and the commercial agriculture and the construction and that goes into making all of these things, it leaves you speechless. People would they would rethink the whole thing, but no one wants to have that conversation because they're dug in on their position and they don't really want to know anything different because no one is agreeing with them. You have to start by agreeing. Then you back out to, okay, now that we've discussed this intelligently, you tell me, what's the lesser evil?
Called blood minerals in some circles. Ron Stein, he's a Pulitzer Prize nominee author. That's what he calls them, blood minerals, because it's like the blood diamonds, except for they're mining these minerals. And
there's a limited amount. There is a limited amount of rare minerals and no one wants them dug up in their backyard. I was in China in 2008, and I can tell you, I was there on business, so I was in the business districts. I was not in the ancient city or seeing any of the beautiful China that people go to see. I was where the people live that work 12, 15-hour days for a living. They're walking around in masks. They're living in high rises where their quality of life is a 12 by 12 room for an entire family. There was so much pollution in the air. And you know what? They hate us for it. We have all these issues with the Chinese government. The Chinese people hate us because their country is our trash can. Their country is where we go to dig things up and have things manufactured, regardless of what it does to their environment. Two new coal-powered plants come online there every month because they need energy and they don't have another source.
Had some wind come in here and blow the papers off my desk. You know, speaking of wind energy.
Yes, sir.
This is another thing I tell the school kids. Actually, it's more of college kids that I'll share this message with and adults is, and I say this on the air all the time, and I firmly believe this, that when it comes to wind energy, the Amish are more advanced than we are. And when you take a look at what an Amish family can do with a windmill, an Amish family with their neighbors in one weekend can put a windmill up and get power for their, if they want, they can get a limited power for their pole barn. They can get water, and that windmill can really add a lot to the quality of life. And in when they're done with it, they can tear it down. And we haven't even gotten that far. We don't even have reclamation programs for the wind farms. A lot of these landowners that have wind turbines on it, they don't understand that they're on the hook for that. I mean, so a lot of states are going to have to, and a lot of states are currently doing this. I think Illinois is doing it right now. They're having to change their legislation to basically subsidize the orphan abandoned wind turbines because one, they don't have a reclamation, and number two, they don't even know where to recycle them. They don't even know what to do with them.
Once again, it's the movie WALL-E, and you have run toward a solution that did nothing but create a new problem, and now you're dealing with the pollution and the fallout and the aftermath of that, and the destruction to the environment that happens while they're running. They take out raptors. People don't want them anywhere near them because there's so much noise pollution. And, you know, so everyone wants these things. No one wants it in their backyard. So where do they go? Where is the fair place to have these things? Well, let's go put it in nature and make it nature's problem because I don't want it near my house.
These wind turbines, anything outside of a small scale on a house, like I said, the Amish, that's the most advanced we've gotten. And they don't have these huge wind turbines. They've got way too much respect for the eagles and hawks and bats. You probably know this, that during the Obama administration in 2016, right before he left, he signed an executive order so that wind turbine companies wouldn't be sued anymore because so many of them were being sued they were killing the eagles left and right. In fact, the golden eagle is almost extinct in the Southwest.
Due to
wind turbines. When you take a look at what happened in Germany, by the way, went back to coal. They tried to do this big green revolution. It didn't work. So they had to go back to coal and other things. But what Germany found out is the farms where the wind turbines were 70% less insects than what the other farms had without wind turbines.
Right.
And then you take a look at the bats, where the bats are attracted to the noise.
Right.
And so they become kamikaze pilots.
Yeah.
And when I take a look at how they'll shut down an oil and gas operation for a sage grouse, and they don't care about the eagles, they don't care about the bats, they don't care about the pollinators, they will do almost anything to protect the wind industry, who, by the way, hasn't even met the goals that they put on themselves for the last 30 years of getting government subsidies. Sorry, I just... I'm very tolerable about every energy, but wind, I get on my soapbox.
Well, they've gotten the funding, they've gotten the subsidies. Yeah. They just don't deliver the power.
Solar has its issues. I mean, I get that, but there you can at least see what they're trying to get with wind. I can't see where they were going, how they came up with that idea. I mean, it's just, it is so backwards on that whole wind side of things. And solar, to be honest, I personally will never take anyone serious about solar until they can have a legitimate conversation about making every house face south when they build it. Mm-hmm. Because there you'll reduce your solar or you'll reduce your heating and cooling bills by about 50-70%. And all you have to do is face the house south so you can use the solar energy, but in a different way. Mm-hmm. You use it as passive solar. Mm-hmm. And anyway, that gets a little too bit existential energy, if you know what I mean.
Yes. But yes.
Well, getting back to Colorado, what was the message, the walk away that you want industry to know? What's the message you want industry to tell their friends and family? And what's the message that, you know, the average citizen really should know about what's going on in Colorado and what they need to do?
Well, it's all over the conservative radio here, and it's not on any of the mainstream media. Basically, the fact that energy costs are going to go up, that what they're not saying, which they need to be saying, is the cleanest energy in the country, and I would argue probably in the world, is being created right here in Colorado. The producers hold themselves to a higher standard than anywhere else in the country. They go above and beyond regulation. And I know so many of these people personally, all the way up to the C-suite, and they're incredibly proud of how cleanly they do go about all of their efforts, from exploration to construction to operations and maintenance to transportation to refinement. They are stewards of the environment, I believe, far more than a lot of the people who claim to be stewards of the environment but turn away from the facts that we've rattled off during this show.
Is there any websites that people are being directed to, or any sort of central location that people can find information?
I would definitely go to, first of all, I think everyone who's interested in the entire argument about energy should be following Robert Bryce on LinkedIn. And I think he's also on Instagram and Facebook. He actually is a proponent of nuclear energy as the cleanest, safest, least impact on the environment. And he makes the argument for fossil fuels being the second best, and that it really is an elitist outlook of the United States to try to shut down the world's energy when we've been a first world country for 100 plus years, 200 years, I'd say. And other countries are just coming out of third world. They're just starting to move up the chain, and they're just starting to get power. And he spends a lot of time in these other parts of the world where they have no power. They're running behind the cow on the street to pick up cow manure to burn for their dinner. And here we are saying, nope, we're not going to do this. We're not going to do that. We're not going to allow people. And I got to say this before I forget. And you can edit this however you want, because this is going to come out of left field. But again, when you're plugging into an outlet, where do people think the electricity comes from? Is it magic? It's coming from natural gas. It's coming from coal. Those are the two sources in Colorado. It's not coming from solar. It's not coming from wind. So if we do shut off gas production, gas exploration, where is it going to come from? It makes no sense. And if we are importing it from the Middle East, oh my gosh, what we're going to pay for it. So that's a huge takeaway, is cut off your nose to spite your face and only stop and realize it when it's way too late to put it back on.
Kelly Marshall, I've got one more question for you as we go into overtime, because you're a creative thinker and a creative director in the energy industry, as well as an energy ambassador. So one of the analogies that I've been trying to utilize as a way for the oil and gas industry, for them to understand what's happening, mm-hmm. and for other industries too, for the average person. So when I was probably about don't know, 15 years ago or so or something like that. I was bringing my niece and one of her friends to my cousin's family reunion on their dairy farm in Cokato, Minnesota. And we drove down there and the eighth grader, as we were pulling in, that was her literally her first time out of the city. And she had never been to a farm.
Eighth grade.
Yep. Oh. And so, yeah, that's pretty normal for a lot of the kids, you know, that type of thing. Even if they go on vacation, it's, you know, on a plane and then they go to another city, or if they even if they drive, they just drive to a bigger city, that sort of thing. So really hadn't been out in the country or farm or anything. So she had never, it never dawned on her that a cow is where hamburger came from.
That's a rough
day. She never even thought of it. Like, she just always went to the grocery store and there it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was trying to explain that to an oil and gas conference one time on how, you know, I grew up in agriculture. I didn't grow up in oil and gas. So I grew up with farmers and that sort of thing. And so I did hear a lot of my farmers complaining, my family farmers, my cousins and my uncles and aunts, complaining about how the grocery store was getting all the credit for their work. How the butcher was the one who everybody...
Who delivered the meat, yes.
Yeah, for the meat, you know, and the stock boy was the one that everybody was thanking for the produce and all that stuff, you know. And so, you know, flash forward to, you know, me bringing my niece and her friend to a family reunion to where, yeah, the grocery store replaced the farmer and the light switch has replaced the oil and gas worker.
Exactly.
So as long as the light switch keeps working, the oil and gas industry, you got an uphill battle.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the story that I try to explain to the industry, that this has happened before. And the internet did it to the newspapers, because when you take a look at the internet, 90% of the internet before podcasting took off after COVID, 90% of the internet was newspaper reporters. Mm-hmm. And then 10% of the internet was newspaper reporters and original content producers. Mm-hmm. And 90% was a reaction to the 10% of original news.
Right.
And yeah, and so I kind of look at it where the grocery store replaced the farmer, the sports shouting internet person has replaced the reporter and newspaper. And now the light switch has basically replaced the oil and gas worker and coal worker and that sort of thing. So,
right.
Anyway, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that or not, but that's just kind of my analogy on what's going on in the industry in a nutshell.
It's the word electric is not synonymous. The word electric is synonymous with oil and gas. It's not a separate thing. It's fueled by what you're trying to ban. If you're not going to burn trees, which I doubt anyone in this argument wants to do, you've got to responsibly source and be incredibly conscientious about emissions. It's oil and gas. And to your point, coal, if you can source coal without affecting people's health, without affecting communities with pollution, and without taking the tops off of mountains, I'm sure everyone would be all for it. But when you have fallout of any kind, that's when you're going to have canary in the coal mine situations where, you know, it will become obsolete from the reputation it precedes itself with. And I think a good thing to close with, I was at a association meeting, I want to say last year, and I want to say it was at either the Rocky Mountain Pipeliners Association or Colorado Oil and Gas Association. It might have been Gas Processors Association, I don't know. But they were talking about the politics in the United States right now and where it's going and where it will end up for oil and gas unless there is a complete about face, unless there is some successful communication, which is not that hard to do, communicating the actual facts to the public so that they can make an educated and intelligent decision. We are going to cut off our noses to spite our face. And at the end of his presentation, everyone was just sitting there silent in again, I want to say the way they were on the Capitol, just kind of beaten down. We're supplying this thing that people need. We're not lawyers. We're keeping your lights on. We're keeping your house warm. We are part of your Maslow hierarchy. We're at the bottom of the pyramid. We are a need. We are not a luxury. And we're being vilified, and we've allowed it to happen for so long without fighting back that we've been rendered moot. And the key takeaway at the end of that session, somebody put their hand up and they said, "So what do we do?" And he said, "If I were every one of you, I would go out and buy a generator because Colorado will have rolling blackouts within the next 5 years." And whole home generator sales are at an all-time high, and they run on gasoline or natural gas. Again, the loop, when it's connected, what sense does that make?
Well, anything, I was going to try to figure out how to do a closing on that, but you
Well, and
kind
I've
of.
got one more thing for you because you asked me for associations, and I'm going to give you a couple. So,
Okay.
I would definitely have your listeners check out Colorado Oil and Gas Association. That's COGA.org. They focus on the legislative issues facing energy in our state. The Coloradans for Responsible Energy and Development, that's CRED.org. They are more of a, that's where you're going to be getting your advertising from, but they also have a lot of great facts, and they are more, they're not far right. They're more of a middle, just intelligent organization. Not that being right or left is not intelligent, but they're willing to see more sides of the story. And then there's also a website called the Common Sense Institute. That website is all about the economic impacts of all sorts of things. One of the big titles in there is oil and gas and what the cost of oil and gas going up will do to citizens and how far their dollar will go in 5, 10 years, what it will do to funding for schools, et cetera, et cetera. Again, these are things that most people tune out and don't want to hear until it affects them. A rolling blackout isn't real until it happens at your house. Then all of a sudden, people's idea about the entire issue seem to emergency shift.
Common Sense Institute, Trisha Curtis, congratulations. She's a new fellow from there. I saw on social media she was talking about that. And the other organization you mentioned, what was the one before that?
Coloradans for Responsible Energy Development, that's CRED.org. And
Cred.
yeah, and COGA.org is COGA, Colorado Oil and Gas Association.
That's Dan Haley, right?
Yes, sir.
And then Cred is the one that's taking out the TV ads, doing the, and in your opinion, doing the real, doing a great job of connecting in a way that the industry hasn't been able to do in a while.
I would say that it could be better, but
Okay.
they're actually getting through. The media buy alone is getting them traction. And the message has been tweaked to the point where I can't believe it's not resonating.
And then the Common Sense Institute. I got to be honest, I hadn't heard of that before Trisha announced it on social media. I know the Goodfellas and or the Goodfellow Institute, the Manhattan Institute, the Odd Fellows even. So I'm very familiar with these types of institutes and what they represent. And the Common Sense Institute, I kind of got. I figured out what it was, think tank type of a thing, but I'm not familiar with them as much. Do you know anything about them?
It's very smart. I mean, it's all economics. And so if you're a financial person or you're just a person concerned about how far their dollar is going to go, it's all there. They've got
Okay.
charts, graphs, they've got explanation of, costs of things over decades, over years. It's incredibly well done. But again, one thing to remember is all of these sources are for the choir. We're preaching to the choir on this. The choir aren't the people we need to communicate with. So if we're actually trying to shift the needle, these organizations are all pro oil and gas, they're pro energy development in Colorado, and people that are not pro energy development exploration, they aren't going to be interested in going to these organizations, but it's, all we can do is promote them.
I think that is the number one issue in oil and gas, to be honest, is they need to extend the message outside of their normal echo chamber,
Beyond
because
themselves.
really that's really what they create is an echo chamber, because a lot of those organizations, and I mentioned this earlier, and that's how we got on CRED, was you pointed out that they're kind of breaking outside of the echo chamber and doing a very good job connecting. But they could do better if XYZ, and we always can do better. But that was always my issue, is that you go to any state, and generally there's like 5 to 10 nonprofits and all these industry groups and everything, and they're saying this exact same message to
Exactly.
the same people, and in the same groups and everything. And so I'm glad that there's starting to be some more reach and some more outside the thing. That's why we feel it's so important to stay on the radio, because, like I said, connecting with the veterinarian, connecting with the fleet farm worker, connecting with the teachers. These are people who use energy. These are people who use the light switch.
Who
They need to
doesn't?
know what turns
Right.
their light switch on so that the farmers don't get mad at the grocery store anymore. That type of thing. So it's just
Yeah,
kind of.
this is not this, there is no demographic. It's everyone.
Yes,
It's
exactly.
everyone. Your demographic is everyone. So then it's just breaking it down to who is pro and who is against. Forget pro. Don't give that any energy. Against, don't come out against as if you understand why they're against. You've actually got to figure that out and speak to them where they are.
Well, I appreciate the time today, and we'll have to have you back and figure out some more ways that we can help solve the world's problems, or at least Colorado's problems, huh?
Yes, I feel like we've got the whole brain trust here that we need. That's probably part of our problem. We think we've got it all figured out.
Well, yeah, we've been doing too much overthinking. That's right. And so it's time to do some over drinking. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes. Well, I really appreciate the invitation and just the opportunity to talk about this. I'm incredibly passionate, and it's the people in this industry are amazing, and they've been too quiet for too long, and they need the right people to step up and speak on their behalf.
And tell you what, I'm not speaking on behalf of the industry, but I do appreciate you going out and showing your support and getting active. And in the future, especially leading up to the election, feel free to lean on the Crude Life. And we'll definitely, we've got 500,000 social media followers between all the different Facebooks and LinkedIns and all those different sites, and then the about 20 some radio stations. And then we do quite a bit with print as well, because print has changed into just being digital content producers, but they still represent a very big part. So again, we feel it's important to connect with as many of the energy users as possible. And if you drive a car and you got a light switch,
You're in the group.
you're part of the club, really. So.
Yeah, we're all on the same team. We just gotta stop picking teams so fiercely. I appreciate you. I really do.